And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism audio show number 39. My name is Brian Schell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. And just two quick announcements. I don't have any phoned-in questions this week because no one phoned in any questions. As in the past, if your phoned-in question is played on the show, you'll win a free month of the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. Of course, if you're a little phone-shy, you can always send in your questions to dailybuddhism@gmail.com. But if you're a little more adventurous or you'd like to win that subscription, give me a call at 937-660-4949 and leave your question on the voicemail there. On the other hand, this week we saw a big leap in reader-submitted stories and material. You guys want to share your stories? Man, that's great. We actually had reader-submitted material 3 days this week. Well, I don't want to do that many guest posts every week. It was really helpful to me this time, because I'm setting up a new site, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But if you want to submit something Buddhism-related to be included in the Daily Buddhism emails and great audio show, then drop me a note with your idea, and we'll proceed from there. Personal stories, poems, reviews, a biography of someone, a lesson on something, doesn't matter, the topics are wide open. Drop me a line, dailybuddhism@gmail.com, and we'll talk about it. And now, on with this week's show. Okay, once again, I want to wish each of you a happy and healthy new year. I appreciate your readership over the past year, and this upcoming year I hope to continue along the same path here at Daily Buddhism. I don't have any major changes planned. Things should continue pretty much as they always have. Yet, I want to do a little more. I know my blogs, especially the Daily Buddhism, have been a real help to some people. Teaching the path of Buddhism relieves suffering for many of you, and it's wonderful that I can help in that way. Still, I'd like to be doing something on a bigger scale, with people who really need help. And how can I help reduce suffering in the world? Well, with my financial situation, anything involving money is kind of out of the question. But one thing I do have is a large and growing number of readers and listeners. You guys. So, I want to use my blogging skills and my listener and reader base, you guys, to do some good for people who are doing good. I can give publicity to those who need it, and that's exactly what I'm going to do this year. Take a look at www.herobulletin.com. There's not much there yet. I only just set up the site this past week. But as you can see, the plan is to feature individuals who are making a positive difference in the world. With any luck, as the site grows, some of those heroes may gain new donors, or volunteers, or whatever it is that they need. So why am I putting this on the Daily Buddhism? As Buddhists, it is our goal and our duty to relieve suffering in the world. This is my new project, but I would suggest that each of you should decide if there's something you can do to make the world a better place and help end suffering in some way, even if only in your own neighborhood or workplace. Meditation is nice for Buddhists and an important part of Buddhism, but actions matter just as much, if not more. So, if you know someone who is already working hard to make a difference, nominate them to be featured on the new site. They deserve the recognition, and they'll sure appreciate any support that flows their way because of it. I can come up with a few starter heroes to feature on the site, but I'm going to need names and suggestions fairly quickly, so you can be a hero by nominating your hero today. www.herobulletin.com. Sign up for the free newsletter if you're there and you'd like to get updates by email. I don't know the frequency of the updates yet, but I doubt that it would be more than once a day, certainly less in the beginning. As of right now, I have 4 heroes up there, so you can get a pretty good idea of where the site's going. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, we had a fairly long 2-part guest post by J.J. Simon. There is no reason to break it into two parts here, so I will read the entire thing in one long part. He introduces himself in his story, so I'll move right into it. My name is J.J. Simon, and I have been on a spiritual journey since 1988. This journey has included study and practice in the 12 Steps, Christian Science of the Mind, the work of P.D. Ouspensky, G.I. Gurdjieff, Maurice Nicol, Emmett Fox, and James Allen. My search for a path that I truly could relate to ended when I met a student of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, a Tibetan meditation master. I began studying Buddhism and practicing sitting meditation. I took refuge, the formal process of becoming a Buddhist, in 1994. I have been sitting and studying ever since. In the movie The Razor's Edge, the main character Larry tells his teacher that he has decided to leave his Himalayan meditation retreat with this phrase, "It's easy to be a holy man on the top of a mountain." The opposite of this couldn't be truer for most of us who have decided that it is in our best interest to become Buddhists. It is not easy to be a holy person in the real world. That is why we practice. In every how-to meditation book, there will be a suggestion that we cultivate a daily practice. When I took meditation instruction at centers and during retreat, there was always an emphasis on taking your practice into the world. It took me over 10 years to have an experience of what this means. When we sit, we are training our capacity to pay attention and observe both our internal and external reality. This observation is gentle and non-judgmental. It is precise and gradually penetrative, allowing us to have a deeper connection and experience of ourselves and our world. But having done that work on the cushion, we still have to live our lives. We have to deal with disappointment, desire, lust, greed, anger, jealousy, love, kindness, hope, patience, death, suffering, and fear. We have to carry on relationships with friends, loved ones, co-workers, bosses, children, animals, and strangers. The big question from the first minute you get off your cushion is, how do we do this? Chogyam Trungpa had several phrases like having a kitchen sink relationship with one's experience, or making a proper cup of tea, or returning to square one. All of these ideas are reminders to take the experience of attention and bring it into our lives. When I make coffee, I try to have a complete experience of making coffee. I work to break the habit of being on autopilot by applying attention to each detail of making a cup of coffee. I pick up the cup and feel the texture of it, grab the milk container, and experience the coldness of it. Listen to the pour and smell the coffee. Feel the weight of it in my hands as I raise it to my lips. Taste it and look inside myself to see what my emotional experience is. Even if it's indifference, I am connecting to my reality. I am observing my experience and coming back to square one by making a proper cup of coffee. We drift in and out of this mindfulness every day. The point is not to be critical of oneself, but to come back again and again to life, to our experience in this moment. This is the kitchen sink. Sometimes the dishes are done, and sometimes we have to do the dishes. This is where we practice the path. We come to this path because we are suffering. Even the Buddha came to the path because he was afraid of old age, suffering, and death. He was afraid for himself and for others, and he was moved by compassion to find a solution. We too are moved to find a solution to our suffering. When we come off of the meditation cushion and we have had a nice, peaceful sit, we want to take that practice into the world, but that is not the way life is. The point of being able to focus one's attention is to be present while being uncomfortable. Both serenity and discomfort are temporary experiences, but we seek comfort and security over real experience. This comfort-seeking perpetuates discomfort by reinforcing habits that cause us to grasp at what we want, push away what we don't like, and ignore the rest of reality. Life provides us with perfect opportunities to practice being present and observe all those habits. Whenever we are uncomfortable, this is a cue to practice what we do on the cushion. Pay attention. For instance, we get frustrated because the cat puked on the rug in the middle of the night and we stepped in it in the dark. Our mindfulness slides away and we're left distracted and grossed out. We have missed an opportunity to practice, to be present, and have the experience of disgust or anger is taking attention out of the meditation hall and applying it in real time. Every time we are able to come back and be attentive of this moment, we are making progress towards breaking the habitual cycles that keep us suffering. These habitual cycles manifest as all kinds of thoughts and emotions that influence behavior and cause continual problems because we are on autopilot and not directly engaged with our lives. Our lives are our paths. Your life is your path. It is perfectly suited for you. In Buddhism, there are many practices for cutting away habitual responses and connecting to our existence. There are practices for relating to impermanence, egolessness, humility, loving-kindness, compassion, and emptiness. Here are a few that I use in my life to help me connect to my reality and work with my habits. In Tibet and India, meditators would go to charnel grounds, places where bodies were broken apart for funerals, to meditate on impermanence. Pema Chodron has said that the closest thing to that in the modern world would be a hospital. Since we can't go to and meditate in the middle of the emergency room, I came up with a practice from a natural reminder, roadkill. When I see roadkill, it brings me back to attention. I say a prayer for the being, and I remind myself that I, too, am going to die. My fate is no different, and even the causes could be the same. I see my body dissolving to dust, and I let it go. I do this for a few minutes. My world has provided me an opportunity to be present, to practice contemplating my own impermanence, and to work with my fear of death. I own 2 cats and 2 dogs. At times, they can be very annoying. I have a cat that likes only me, and it pesters me for attention. My habit is to give it a little pet and then push it away and go about my business. One day, I started paying attention to just petting the cat. It took my attention from the cushion, and I used it to experience the cat, its fur, and the way it moved when I pet it. Then I began to reflect on the idea that this was an opportunity to be kind. The cat was providing me an opportunity to experience love and kindness, and to work with my habits of impatience and lack of tolerance. I pet the cat. I pay attention. I send a thought of thanks to the cat for providing me with the opportunity to be consciously kind. I pay attention to my emotions. I pet the cat. I begin to make this a practice. Soon, it had spilled over into my personal relationships. I would be sitting with a friend and something would bring me back to attention. I would acknowledge the opportunity to be kind, to engage in a friendship. I would send a thought of thanks to my friend or my wife. My world has provided me with an opportunity that allows me to practice attention, loving kindness, gratitude, and patience by simply petting a cat. If I did this on autopilot, like I have done throughout my life, there would be no connection. Instead, I took the practice of attention off of the cushion where I learned it, and I applied it to my reality. The reality that is happening all the time, and I'm given a blessing by a small, annoying cat. In the end, the questions of enlightenment, holiness, and spiritual perfection are best left to the experts. Even if I was blessed by every guru in the world, it would still be up to me to do the work. So, we should work to make our life our practice. Take teachings when we can. Build our meditation up from the short periods to daily practice, and then long-term practice. But none of it will do anything if we can't bring it into our world and be a holy person at the bottom of the mountain. Good luck, and remember to train smart. Okay, that was by J.J. Simon, and J.J. Simon has two websites, which you can visit if you'd like. One is his business, www.explosivetattoosouth.com, and the other is the martial arts learning community that he directs, www.themalc.org, themalc.org. And next up, we have something a little bit different. This time, we have a guest book reviewer. Matt Segrist, a longtime listener, tells us about a bargain discovery he recently found. If you would like to do a review of some Buddhism-related product, drop me a note, and we'll move on from there. A book, Practical Meditation with Buddhist Principles, by Venerable Thubten Lundrup. This is published by Hinkler Books. It's 64 pages, full color. And as always, there is an Amazon link in the show notes. This review is by Matt Segrist. This book and DVD box set offers an introduction to meditation and Buddhist principles. Throughout the book are numerous beautiful pictures covering everything from statues, paintings, and bowls to close-ups of quilts and other exotic fabrics. Written by a Mahayana monk, this book covers all aspects of Buddhism, Theravadan and Mahayana to Zen and Pure Land Buddhism. It also covers many, I hesitate to say all, aspects of Buddhism, from a short history to the Four Noble Truths, suffering, the Eightfold Path, all the way to mindfulness, karma, and the path to enlightenment. The last fifth of the book offers phrases to meditate upon. The DVD offers a brief introduction and short guided meditations with audio and video. The Good. The book is constructed of high-quality glossy paper that will last for many thumbings through. The pictures are incredibly colorful and clear, and cover many different subjects. If you want a quick refresher on Buddhism, the book can be read in an hour. The DVD didn't appear to be of studio quality to me, but it was very peaceful to watch. If you meditate with your eyes open, the guided meditations offer many pictures, different from the book, that are just as equally striking and mesmerizing. And the Bad. The cover is little more than cardboard stock, and the ring binder doesn't give it much appeal to leave around as a coffee table book. While the author does attempt to cover everything, there are many aspects in which he doesn't provide much more than a short synopsis of the principle. The pictures, while amazingly beautiful to look at, have no background information supplied about them. If you're new to Buddhism, you aren't even sure what you're exactly looking at. The bottom line. If you've listened to the first 10 podcasts of the Daily Buddhism, the book will not offer you any new information. However, if you want a reference book that is short and concise, this book will serve you well. The guided meditations on the DVD are short, so if you have been meditating for any length of time, they probably are going to be too short for you. I found this box set, book, and DVD package while walking through the local Borders bookstore, where it was on clearance for $7.99. And if you can get it at that price, I would definitely purchase it. Warning! A sexual topic follows. Please don't listen further if you're likely to be offended or think the topic is inappropriate. I debated the appropriateness of the topic, and came to the conclusion that others are probably wondering the same thing as this reader. So here goes. A reader wrote in with the question, I am a male who wishes to kick a long habit of masturbation. My efforts have resulted in cutting down from daily to weekly. Still, the habit continues. I find I am most vulnerable when I fall into the act when I am not fully conscious. For example, when I'm going to sleep or upon waking up. What would you suggest to prevent my thoughts from becoming lustful and for kicking this undesirable habit altogether? And my answer. Well, first, I'm going to start off by asking you, why is it undesirable? Believe it or not, Buddhism does not condemn masturbation, unless you're a monk, which I doubt is the case. The physical aspect is harmless. That being said, that may not be the case where karma is concerned. Desire, more specifically in this case, lust, as the Four Noble Truths tell us, leads to suffering. And of course, a Buddhist's main desire is to eliminate suffering. Now this is probably a very debatable topic, and I hope someone will address it in the comment section of the blog. But in my opinion, the real question is what goes on in your mind while you're doing it. If you can do it without lust, then my Buddhist answer would be to go ahead with it. But actually, the way you word your question, I wonder if it might not fall in line with some of the addiction treatments out there. Addictions are a very harmful form of attachment, which Buddhists are very much against. Perhaps a look at the 12-step Buddhist site covered a couple weeks ago would help. There are undoubtedly many sexual addiction websites out there as well. But as far as breaking the habit is concerned, if you still want to break the habit, I don't really have any advice that can't be found elsewhere, and if I tried to make something up, it would probably just sound silly. So I guess the most important advice I can give is that as long as you control the lust or try to eliminate it, there really isn't terribly wrong with doing this. I'm not sure that this answer is adequate, so let me know if there's any more I can clarify or add. I absolutely invite comments on this post, and I'm sure that this will be a much debated topic. And I was right. I posted this question and answer on the website on Thursday, and since then I've seen at least a dozen comments posted on the blog, all adding additional thoughts and insight to the question. So if this topic interests you, check the show notes, go to the post for this topic, and read down through the comments. There are at least a dozen, and they're very good. And that's it for this week. If you have a question on any Buddhism-related topic, send in your questions by email to dailybuddhism@gmail.com or phone them in at 937-660-4949. Or post them in the comments section of any individual blog post. Remember, the Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations, and it's easy to help out. Just go to dailybuddhism.com/donate and click on one of the options there. You can donate as little as $1. If you choose to send in either a $5 a month or make a one-time donation of $50 or more, you'll get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. But anything you send in is appreciated and helpful. Keep in mind that the Daily Buddhism Daily Newsletter is completely free. All you need to do is go to the site and sign up. And I'll see you next week.